It is time for the Media Beat, time where we bring in David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast this recording, gets rebroadcast during the weekend and also next week during our noontime hour as well. And once again, let us bring in the reporter-in-chief, David Tarachuk. Good morning, David.
Good morning. I'm reporting in to you from the media capital of the world, New York City, of course. Also, the I'm afraid to say, the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic still. We've not been overtaken by anyone else yet.
Well, you know, what's interesting about the coronavirus now, as you look at it, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts are now definitely, you can see just by looking at long-term graphs, on reached the peak and it's going and it's sliding down. But once again, the toll on the rest of the country, on other states that have not yet reached that, continues. And people are dying now in this country at the average rate of almost 2,000 a day, which is a World Trade Center a number that is happening every day
almost
of the week.
Almost as many as in that one terrible disaster, yes.
But what's interesting, you also look at the world view on this, not only the United States view, and we just had reports on this morning. The German economy has shrunk by almost 2.5%. I think it's 2.2%, which is as much as it almost shrunk in the 2009 financial crisis.
Yeah, and at the same time, it's kind of and yet thought, and yet, given all that you just described, there is a wave, I think it's fair to call it that, a wave now, not just in the United States, but right across the world, of people wanting to get their businesses back in business and their economies back to ticking over. And it's a very patchy scene just within the United States. I think it's fair to say that nationwide, it's a messy picture. Even you might even argue, and of course some people are arguing, that it is feckless and irresponsible, even prompting the infectious diseases czar, Dr. Anthony Fauci, to say in his evidence this last week, given from self-isolation to the congressional committee he was called by, saying that there could be very serious consequences from opening up again too early. And how early is too early? Well, it's very hard to say. The CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, are trying to lay down guidelines, but some good journalism has shown that the guidelines that are published today are not of, I mean, this is their final form, but their earlier forms are intriguing. The White House has, I'm not sure the word is interfered, but certainly intervened on the CDC's set of guidelines and changed them and made them looser and less restrictive. And the big question is, are we being too cavalier in our opening up? And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens and if the most obvious terrible outcome does happen, that we get another spike or a crescendo in reported cases and deaths. Public opinion is interesting on this. I think politicians must have to, you know, the leaders of all kinds will have to take this into full account. I wonder if they will, depending on their own positions, of course. In a very reliable poll, normally Ipsos, the public opinion pollsters, they found that Americans are saying to the degree of 16% of them that the country believes that we should. Only 16% believes that we should positively, actively be opening up our state's economies, whereas on the other hand, 75% say that they that we should keep on battling the transmission of the disease, even if it means keeping businesses closed. I think that's probably a common sense, widely held, ordinary person's belief in very many cases. This poll says 75% of us believe that. So, you know, leaders who are responding to the pressure of businesses especially, but other people too, just people who want to see the economy prospering and not in the freeze that it's gotten into, they want to see it open up, of course, but you have to balance that against the dangers and, it seems, the opinion of most Americans.
What's interesting is how this affects locally. We have a thrift shop that really supports and makes it possible for us to do a lot of different things with Tri-State Public Communications. On May 20th, we polled the people that that work there, our employees and also our volunteers, if we should reopen. All the full paid employees said yes, they want to get back to work. Even though they were still getting paid, we were paying them regardless whether they were working or not.
You were paying them anyway.
We were paying them anyways. And also, the volunteers, about 50% of them want to come back. So, well, we contacted the state and we got what we have to do. I mean, everybody that enters the building, it needs a mask. We're putting up a plastic separation wherever there's a counter, so there's a separation between employees and volunteers and people coming in. We're not accepting donations immediately. We are also going to probably say one family member per person, and we're going to have a limited number of people that come into the store. Mm-hmm. And we by Connecticut's rule, we're not going to have no dressing rooms won't be open. And this is what we're going to do. But here's the thing that really is aggravating. I was watching this week on television when we were told that. The CDC plans have not yet been fully released, what they're recommending you do. Then the director got on and said, well, you can call the CDC if you have any information you need at all. Well, David, I want to tell you.
I'm sure that works very well.
It doesn't. You know, it doesn't. There's no contact. So what the state of Connecticut is doing, on Monday, they're going to release a very comprehensive list of what retail businesses need to do. Now, that gives us only a couple of days, but at least the state of Connecticut is making some sort of effort to let us know what we have to do. But here's what I don't understand. We have FEMA, which is a great organization, which goes in and deals with disasters of hurricanes, tornadoes. Well, you know, it is my thought that FEMA, along with the CDC, should be dealing with this, because really businesses want to open, but we don't want to open irresponsibly. And most people want us to open. We've had a few people who are thinking that we shouldn't open, but we all want better guidance from the federal government, not just the state government, but from the CDC and from FEMA on this. And it's just not forthcoming to our businesses. Maybe it is to major businesses. I don't know. But it's not forthcoming to small businesses.
Yeah. The coronavirus spread of agent of disease is like many another disaster. I mean, you're right to bring up the example of FEMA as a federal agency which can span the whole country and then do things at the national level. The COVID pandemic is not unlike a major disaster in one very important respect. For people who study the way that political systems and countries as a whole operate, it's very revealing of a nation's own disposition in the broadest sense. And what's been shown very clearly here is that we are indeed a federal system of 50 plus states, and the territories and such like. those parts of us that are not quite states. And that balance between the central authority and the individual states is, of course, always dogged. It's been in some ways the strength of the country, but it's, in other ways it's dogged it and given it difficulties. And as I was saying earlier, it has produced in this case a terribly messy pattern across the country. And of course, every time you get down to the level of the state as well, you'll find county by county differences also. So altogether, it's very hard to see how a country with our system of government could ever do what ideally I think we probably would want, which is a consistent and easily comprehensible national plan that everybody could walk around with in their head to some degree. I mean, I have to consult special agencies for particular specific problems, but that sense of a totally unified approach to the problem would appear to be easier in countries like South Korea. And of course, it means a different kind of government, a different tone of government, you know, edging towards dictatorship in some cases. But other countries like Germany, which is a federal system, has seemed to have gotten the balance right. And while their economy is taking a big hit, that's true. There's extraordinary clarity about how to handle this disease. And their case numbers and their death numbers, their fatality numbers, reflect that. They've gotten a hold on this in a way that the United States of America, you know, with all its initially slow response and then as we say, very patchy ongoing response, hasn't been able to do, but Germany has.
Well, and now you also look at the broader picture. China once again, or as our president would like to say, China once again has some resurgences, here's the amazing thing: you don't know what to believe that comes out of the Chinese government or not, but they've come up with a plan, and this is where, whether it's true or not, it makes the United States look feeble in some place, to once again test the entire population, that is 10 million people, within a week to 10 days. And we have.
Well, they could build whole new hospitals within less than 2 weeks, and that kind of thing. Sure, there is, as I say, when you have a dictatorship, even if it's the so-called dictatorship of the proletariat, it's that much easier to, you know, with the stroke of a pen, make things happen nationwide. That's not necessarily what we want, but there are certainly lessons, and of course, you know, even China, with its capacity, at least for, you know, enforced consistency everywhere, is having the same the problems now that Dr. Fauci was alluding to.
You know,
as being possible, indeed likely, out of too hasty an opening up. In Wuhan, the very initial epicenter of the disease, we now have numbers going up again. Suddenly, not huge numbers, not a vast, you know, pointed spike, but numbers again, because, of course, things have gotten looser in terms of the transmission of the, you know, combating the transmission of the disease. So it can happen on the scale of China like that, and it can happen in the Bay Area, where San Francisco and surrounding townships and small cities are finding that they haven't had any cases for 2 weeks or so, any major new swell of new cases for about 2 weeks. And then, just as starting to discuss how precisely to open up, and some opening up has already happened, you get cases of popping up again. Again, not huge numbers, but, you know, warning signs that we can't go too fast. At least that's what many people fear it would happen if we went too fast.
Now, I may be missing this, but I wanted to ask you this question, and that is, you've got the pandemic, you've got a worldwide recession in place. Not everybody's calling it a recession, but it's in place. Could this happen at any worse of a time when Britain has gotten out of the EU? I mean, is this going to be a real significant slug to the British economy on top of already the uncertainty of pulling out of the EU?
Oh yes, without a doubt, without a doubt, that's already happening. It's not too pessimistic to read into this. The message that I was suggesting earlier, that cataclysms like this can be very revealing of a country or a region's character. The European Union, the whole concept of the United, not exactly the United States of Europe, but the coming together in a cooperative union, as they did, in the spirit of immediately post Second World War, wanting to ensure that there is never a war again, not on the scale of World War II, anyway, and consequently, that was how the European Union was formed, and it's grown, and the spirit of collaboration has spread across to include the former former Soviet bloc countries, but the adherence, the cohesiveness of that unit now, of that union, has been severely rattled by this crisis. So some countries putting up, closing their borders when, of course, previously closed borders between nations would have been anathema in the European Union, and a great deal of internecine conflict, not military, of course, not yet at least, but distinct differences emerging, and very bitter ones too. And as for the effect on individual countries' economies, well, of course, you're right. They've all taken a terrible hit, and Britain is no exception, and probably... I may be overstepping my mark here, but I think in Britain it's likely to be even worse than in the main body of what was the European Union, the continental stretch of Europe. Britain's economy is likely to fare even less well. They're pinning their hopes, or at least so many in the government are, on making new deals with America and having trade arrangements with the Trump administration, and as some British observers have been commenting just lately, we can say good luck with that.
It's just as you look at all these worldwide stories, and it proves how small of a world we have. Everything from Brexit to the United States to China and everything. The world economy is so tied together. Things are so bad that the WTO, the World Trade Organization head, is going to quit early. Because
it's not a job I think I would want. Yeah, right.
I mean, because it's all interconnected now. I mean, the global economy, whether people like it or not, is all interconnected now. And when one domino falls, all the other dominoes go right along with it.
Yeah. Chatham House, which I've mentioned a few times before in this slot, a very, very well-respected international policy-making think tank in Britain, just named after the building it occupies. Its formal name is, in fact, the Royal Institute for International Relations. But Chatham House put out a paper this last week, basically questioning whether globalization is crumbling, the age of globalization is over. I wonder if it's that serious. I mean, I'd be hesitant about saying that so definitively, but of course, it's very hard to predict what kind of a world we'll be waking up to each morning once the worst of this current crisis is over. The consequences will, of course, be with us for decades.
I got up this morning, and I try to stay away from the news as much as possible, but I have to.
It's tough for a newsman, isn't it?
I have to. And the first three things that I saw on my news feed today, maybe want to go back to sleep. CDC issues advisory for childhood illnesses linked to COVID-19. The U.S. boosts military pressure on China, and the World Health officials say the virus may never go away. If anything wanted to make me just roll over and go back to bed, it was those three things.
Yes, and turn to very good original investigative journalism that's just appeared too from the Atlantic magazine, published online ahead of the print edition, in which they explore the force and power of a strange, wilder shore of Trumpism called QAnon, which is based on the conspiracy theory promulgated by in the main by someone who calls himself or herself Q, and occasionally posts online, and every wild conspiracy theory is embraced by this, from the Pizzagate idiocy. As a dangerous idiocy, which involved an armed man going in amongst children at a pizzeria in Washington, through to, you know, the usual deep state idiocies, if I'll use that word again, of, as I say, the wilder shores of Trumpism. But it's a thoroughgoing investigation about how that conspiracy theory is generated and continues to be generated. Also, interestingly and helpfully, I think, fits it into the whole history in the United States of conspiracy theories, you know, embracing even the notion that the first moon landing in 1969 was actually staged on a film set, all that kind of thing. Wherever you turn now, I think it's a very dispiriting sight.
All right, I want to go on to a story that comes back to our own government here, and that is, yes, we've had Nancy Pelosi investigated for stock trading, and so far nothing has come of that. We've had
Feinstein.
And Feinstein, yes, and also the Republican, the woman who was
the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Senator Burr,
Now, but with Burr
now in trouble, serious trouble, it seems.
Well, yeah, whenever the FBI seizes your cell phone, especially of a United States senator,
that doesn't look good, does it?
Well, no. And because the rules to do something like that is, you really have to show a lot of evidence to a lot of different judges, and even
his faithful attorney general signed off on this arrest as well, or rather not arrest, but taking in for questioning and seizure of the cell phone, as you say, which is not a small matter. We have a serious situation here. I'm sure a good defense will be mounted, but it's another dispiriting thing about disasters like this bringing out the true character of countries and individual people sometimes. We don't want to prejudice the ongoing process of this investigation, but it's not good that the chairman of an important Senate committee should have this cloud hanging over him.
And it's not good. What's not good about it is that our federal government is meant to come together and lead us. And when I say the government, not only the president, but the House and the Senate, we're meant to have the bones to lead us through significant crises. And you have senators being investigated for taking advantage of inside information. And then you have the president going to war with medical people, and actually saying that the warning that the medical people are giving out is not acceptable. This is where government is truly failing us on the nth degree. People want reassurances from their government and guidance from their government, not confusion.
Consistency would be a good thing, that means, of course, that consensus is important, and consensus just does not come naturally to the current occupants of the Oval Office. And I'm afraid, 3 years into the first term, maybe he will be just a one-term president. But anyway, 3 years into that term, we can see how the approach, if that's the right word for it, from the very top will condition the patterns of behavior and indeed, you know, the whole cast of personnel. That's how it's achieved. He fires when he's not happy, and people who are much more malleable and will stay in line with him and will be loyal to him more than to the Constitution of the United States, and you end up with a spread throughout the administration of a kind of backstabbing and overall contentious and inconsistent form of government, and government doesn't seem quite the word for it. And what we end up with is the very opposite of what you say people want, which is guidance, clarity, and a sense of purpose to battling this pandemic that has, you know, frozen the economy as well as killed many, many United States individuals and individuals throughout the world.
You know, I sit back and I look at what's happening with governments, not only here but around the world, as you say. I mean, if ever the world coming closer together and the global economy and everything was meant to be and started out as a very, very positive thing, but as it's turning out now, with the rise of populism, it all of a sudden. It's not doing what it was supposed to do, the global economy and countries linking up together. Do you see that? I mean, that's the way I look at it. Do you look at it that way?
There's been such a backlash against it. One of the reasons that globalization has found to be wanting right now is that it was never committed to wholeheartedly, and the backlash that you got was turned into such an interestingly anarchic form of response, and you end up with governments in many parts of the country who are every bit as anti-globalist as Trump is in the United States. I can point to everywhere from Hungary to Brazil, and whittling away at the substructures of the very supporting system of globalization by isolationist people and government leaders, then you're bound to have it start to crumble. Globalization is not a machine. It's a concept that people sign on to, and if they don't sign on to it, then obviously it's not going to work. And I'm afraid we're reaping the cost of not taking our electorates along with us when we try and forge sensible relationships at a national and international level.
Well, we'll see what happens when we get together next Friday.
Can we get together after all this contentious mess? Who knows?
I think sooner or later we will, but we'll see what the next week brings us. David, thanks for joining us again this morning with the Media Beat.
Thank you.
David Terechuk live from the media capital of the world, and that is New York City with the Media Beat. You can find the Media Beat online at robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand, click on the Media Beat, and also rebroadcast during the weekend and also during our noontime news block at the beginning of next week.